that's where I see a lot of value for any entrepreneurial people listening, where if we can distill the vast amount of information into what's trending in Discord, trending on X, and be able to like package it in a way where you can link to more information, that's a very valuable product, and I hope it's open sourced.
Renee here at Unsupervised Learning, your easy listening podcast for bleeding edge open source tech. I'm sitting with Mike Bird, who I came across on a, I think it was a Twitter post that was, again, calling out Jan. And I got notified. It was like, hey, we should reach out to this person. And you're doing a lot of really cool stuff with local AI. And now you've joined Open Interpreter officially. Yeah, so Open Interpreter, my understanding is it's an open version of OpenAI's Code Interpreter, which it sounds like I've just said the word open like 50 times, but do you want to take it away?
Yeah, we're the legit open one. So Open Interpreter is a way for LLMs to be able to run code on your computer to accomplish tasks. You can think of it as like the interface between natural language and computer control.
And what do you use it for?
So one cool thing with OpenTerpreter is it's just the breadth of capability. It's really like the everything app.
We've just had to, you know, make the pilgrimage. But you were saying about how you came to be at OpenTerpreter.
Yeah. So OpenTerpreter was launched last September, early on, and I immediately saw and thought, like, this is the future. The ability to take natural language and control computer is something that everyone's kind of working towards, and this was that first like big leap towards that. So right off the bat, just started playing with it. Open source, anyone can download it, try it, and I just started playing around and really enjoyed like the capabilities it unlocked. I was the first person to get it running successfully on a phone, and that demo actually caught a little bit of fire. It was my first viral tweet, really, really excited about it. And it was super basic, but then Killian, the creator of Open Interpreter, reached out and said, hey, the next house party we have these digital house parties, which are a lot of fun. He said, do you want to give another demo? So I said, absolutely, of course. Put together a little bit more, gave a demo there. Everyone really liked it, and then just kind of kept chipping away. I've been doing freelance work for the last year and a bit. And then just doing AI on the side. I've either been a software developer or the AI guy at companies, and then staying up to date on what the open source world was doing, what tools were available, just eventually making some demos, trying out different things. It just kept getting more and more steam. And then one day Killian was like, hey, do you want to join the team? I'm like, absolutely. I've been doing software since 2015 and always had the passion for open source. It's a gift to the world, being able to just like take your creativity, put it out there, and then ever the developer gets to start from that point and move ahead rather than having to start from scratch. So the ability to work for an open source project, especially one as cool as Open Interpreter, has just been absolutely awesome. So yeah, it's just one of those passion projects where a good idea that everyone kind of uses like the natural progression of how we interface with computers, remove barriers, allow more accessibility, inclusivity, and access to compute. And Open Interpreter is making sure everyone has access to that and it's not hidden behind, you know, an OpenAI paywall.
Have you found... So my journey into getting into local AI was a little bit of, it was through like no code and wanting to do things without OpenAI's API and realizing that you can actually run things offline. So what are you finding most people's use cases? Is it a fairly tech heavy audience?
Yeah, definitely. At this point, it's very tech heavy. We only offer, or Open Interpreter is only available via a command line interface tool or as a Python library. And opening up that little black box with just a flashing cursor is pretty intimidating for most people. There is a desktop app in the works, so you can join the waitlist for that. But right now, we are just making sure that the product gets developed. We're still at version 0.2, still very early days. So the technical audience has more understanding nature around how can we work with this tool that's still in its infancy to build it up into something that has all the potential that Open Interpreter promises. And even at this current stage, the current state of open source LLMs are not quite at the point where a wide range of capabilities are there. But the people who use the open source models realize that like each one is tailored to a specific thing. Like you can use something like Dolphin Mixtral, which is a very capable model, probably on par with GPT 3.5, but it's still not going to reach the generality of GPT-4. But then you get ones like SQL Coder, which actually exceed GPT-4 in turning natural language into SQL queries. So knowing that like having this little vertical column of capability per each model and being able to switch between them with tools like Jan or Olama or Llama File really allows a lot of capability, but we're not at the general state that the general public wants with a model like GPT-4. However, it gets better every day. So very soon we'll be able to run Open Interpreter completely locally to the point where it's able to do the tasks that you ask of it.
On the whole, like different models for different tasks, that's one of the foundational kind of questions that I see people asking. So I don't know if I wrote it in the questions that I had for prepared for you, but it was kind of, what do you think is the key kind of unlocks that people need to jump from understanding? So I had a recording yesterday where the person was saying that GPT-4 helped them kind of leapfrog over in terms of their technical capability, where they wouldn't have been able to do it without it, like their coding knowledge, right? And they're not a coder. But it's like, are there things that you think in terms of like a mindset shift that people need to make to be able to start working specifically with open source tools?
I would say the mindset shift needs to be around a willingness to explore, investigate, experiment, play. Like, just be willing to approach a new tool, a new model, with the understanding that it's not going to have all the edges polished. Everything is so new. Everything is expanding so quickly that there's no really defined way of best practices yet. So the understanding that using model A for something might get good results, model B might get great results, but then horrible results for something else. And it's not the fault of the model. It's just a very resource intensive process to train, fine tune, and deploy these models, even running them. Like, the vast majority of people's home hardware is not at the same level as OpenAI server farms. So making sure that expectations are leveled towards what we're actually putting towards it. Because when people talk about having an old laptop with, you know, 16 gigs of RAM, like, you're not going to be able to run that much off of it, and just measuring your expectations based on that. But as you can use tools like Google's Colab or RunPod to actually leverage external GPUs, then you start seeing like a big increase in capability. So it's kind of the flexibility with the existing architecture of the open source ecosystem versus what you want it to accomplish.
So if we go right back, like I did in a different podcast where I was like, okay, let's go right back. So Google Colab, that enables end users to use external GPUs, and that's the whole renting GPUs, right?
Yeah. So with Google Colab, it's an interface to write Jupyter Notebooks, Python code, and then run it on Google GPUs. So locally, you could have a MacBook with decent power, but through Colab, you can pay by the second, but let's say by the minute or hour, to get high-end GPUs that you can really crush through tasks with. And then you're just paying a bill for pay-per-use rather than having to buy a little like tiny box or something, spend 15 grand to get it there. You're able to just pay-per-use, and it does enable you to access these things, but then you're still paying a fair sum when you start using it regularly.
And that's not locally run. Is that mixing the two? Like,
it's run remotely. So it's on the servers hosted by Google, but you can still use open source models through that.
Okay. I'm going to have some kind of like little diagram there for my own understanding. The other thing that you said about different models, I think that's one of the main questions is like, what's the best model for this? And it's like, it's one of those classic, like, it depends things. So, and it changes every day because new models are released every day. But in my mind, and I think of it like a little very infantile, it's like, this one's good for writing, this one's good for coding. So I don't touch things like, what is it, DeepSeek and those coding ones, because I'm like, I have no use for it. But do you have like resources that you would typically go to, like a place where you would recommend? This is generally a question that I leave to the end, but I'm really curious.
Yeah, there's one, I actually forget the name, I'll grab it for you after, but there's an arena where what you'll do is you go to this website and it'll allow you to enter in a prompt, and then it'll generate two responses and you just pick which one's better. If they're the same, you mark them the same. And in the back end, what they're doing is they're ranking all the models based upon user preferences and giving an ELO score similar to how chess players are ranked. So with this, it's really using the general or like the actual output rather than benchmarks, because benchmarks can be gamed. Once you look at Hugging Face's like rankings based on benchmarks, you get these really small models that are fine-tuned on exactly the test that they're measured on. And of course, they're going to crush it. But as soon as you take it out of that constrained environment, they're horrible. So with this arena approach, you're actually having users come in and say, I like this output better than that output. You'll get models like Claude 2.1 ranking significantly lower than it's claimed to, just because it's so heavily censored that its outputs are kind of trash. So getting real world use case like that is good. But one thing that's very popular with people is just vibe check. Download it, play with it. Tools like Jan and Ollama allow you to quickly test different models side by side, where you can say, hey, this is what I want to do. I'm a writer. I needed to draft outlines for me. I want a tool that's really good for that. And then you just got to play with yourself. It's one of those things where you can't always rely on the benchmarks because they can be gamed pretty easily.
That's such a common point that I'm hearing across, like, it doesn't matter who I talk to, really. And so it's kind of similar to, like, if I'm thinking about reviews in like this, because I'm coming from the SaaS world. And it's like nobody really trusts reviews anymore, like G2 or whatever. It's like, But when you mentioned about the patience, it makes me think of like commercialization of open source. And is Open Interpreter, that's not your first open source project that you've been a part of?
It's the first one that I've been employed with. I have worked at other companies where we've released either code bases or full projects as open source. I've been a big proponent. I used to work at a robotic software company, and we had a partnership with this robot manufacturer. And we said, yep, we'll gladly do this work for you, but we want to open source it. Yeah. And I was super proud of the company to do that because, again, it's very niche. Not many people will use it, but now anyone can. So it just enables people to level up that much quicker.
Yeah, because my kind of question, it's not really a question, it's not really a point, it's just one of my typical goes nowhere sentences with, you made me think about, I have to again put it in the notes. It was a research paper on game theory of why people are so reluctant, especially like enterprises are so reluctant to go open source because they're like, oh, people are going to steal my stuff. And it's like, yeah, well, at what point it was like infrastructure as a open source, or I'm gonna have to go back and edit this out, but it was like, have you seen what kind of mindset shift businesses have to make in order to be kind of pro open source, or do you think that it's not something that you can repeat as a pattern?
It's definitely a different business model, and a different mindset in general. When you look at companies like, actually, one step back. So the internet, whether it's servers or IoT devices, all run on Linux, which is an open source software. And the creator of Linux is doing very well for himself because people understand that there are add-ons you can do. Like, it's not just the software that make you money, it's the services behind it. And that's kind of been my approach too, where I am happy releasing the work that I do as open source because people see value in it. People understand the expertise that went into building it. And then they're like, hey, we would like you to integrate this with our service. Hey, we would like to hire you to contract. So instead of just saying, pay me for my product, it's here is an example. Here is proof that I know what I'm doing. Now you can bring me aboard. And it's not for everyone, not every situation, but the people who can pull it off tend to have a greater desire to kind of build up the ecosystem as a whole, and then the ecosystem tends to reward them for it.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, because I just from like a brief interaction with you, you seem like a very positive person, which is, I'm not saying that's unique in open source, but or in tech, but I see a lot of not jaded people, but it's kind of, how do you maintain that positivity around innovation in AI, right? Because there's a lot of like doomers, and then there's also like, how are you remaining balanced about it?
It's very helpful being so ingrained in it when you're on the peripheral of open source AI or just AI in general. All you're hearing is those doom and gloom headlines being like the end of humanity, all of these scary things. But when you're working on it directly, you see the benefit. Like, when Google DeepMind came out with AlphaFold, all of a sudden they solved the protein folding problem, which will lead to countless medical advances, which will lead to countless lives saved. But that makes headlines for a day. There's not people arguing to like push open source or push AI farther ahead because of these advances like AlphaFold. But the amount of suffering that will be reduced, the amount of increase in quality of life all over the world that AI will give is astronomical. Like there will be orders of magnitude more improvement in so many people's lives because of AI getting ingrained in more services. However, that doesn't sell headlines. So a lot of people will just click on to the anger and the fear, the manipulation that comes with that. And it's really unfortunate because we're doing ourselves a disservice by not sufficiently embracing a technology. And don't get me wrong, we need some degree of safetyists rather than doomers who are dragging their feet a little bit, making sure we do things properly, because just like society, we need to push and pull. Like we can't be 100% progressive or 100% conservative because that is a recipe for failure. We need a little bit of both. So having people say, look, like before we just start deploying this thing everywhere, like let's make sure we have like our bases covered first. Very reasonable, very responsible. We also need the people saying like, we need to take a little bit of risks. Like there's you got to risk it to get the biscuit. And it's very important as a society that we understand that the improvements, the societal gains that come from this are going to be so beneficial that so one example, my parents are both retirement age. I live in a very small community with a lot of like old people. And every person who say in 3 years dies of a disease that AI cures in 4 years is a tragedy. We should push it as fast as possible in the medical realm to make sure that we get these advances because the amount of people who have been saved by advances in medical technology increases every year. And this can be a great leap forward. We'll have gene therapy, we'll have a whole bunch of mRNA advances that will really cure diseases that right now don't have enough impact to really justify the funding. But AI is going to all of a sudden change the equation. So yeah, staying positive is just kind of keeping your eye on the prize and realizing that no matter what people say about the negative aspects, when you look at the positive aspects, it really outweighs it.
I recently did like an async interview with someone who worked on a project to just like it was to discover the Parkinson's gene via voice in like low resourcing areas over phone. And it was like how using AI, I'm like, how do you do that? Like I'm like the most non-technical person. I'm like, that's incredible. But I see what you're saying. Like in terms of your own, because I can't stop looking at the 3D printer now that I know what it is. Like your own AI specific projects, like what do you use AI for?
I use it. A lot of it's with coding. A lot of it is offloading the small, tedious things. It also gets around trying to develop automations. I have here a little a Stream Deck, which is a cool little device that streamers use, but I found it's a wonderful productivity tool. And I had no idea how to work it at first, but AI can kind of walk me through the process of like understanding the tool, learning the tool. It's a little like assistant, like you get the back and forth, you get to do the Socratic method to learn things. And then when you understand, you're like, okay, I want to modify it to suit my expectations. And that's where the coding help comes in. So it's still mostly in the coding, in the technical realm. But then you can even branch out being like, I have a buddy who's a videographer and he does amazing work, just came out with a documentary, which is really cool to see. But now AI enables him to no longer rely on like external editors, external graphic designers. AI, one of the cool things about it is it's going to completely remove mediocrity, where the baseline is now elevated because AI enables everyone to be a little bit more capable. And that's one thing that really excites me about Open Interpreter because it has the ability to impact every single industry because you're able to offload work to this little assistant here, have it create things for you, have it accomplish tasks for you. You just give it natural language. I've been working on some ways to automate that when you can just feed it a spreadsheet as an example or any document, and then it parses through it and accomplishes all of those tasks. So all of a sudden, you're freed up to do other things, whether it's work more or take more leisure. And then if you do the leisure route, all of a sudden, like your quality of life improves. You become a happier person, less screen time. There's one thing to be said about how much our current society is stuck on screens and the internet. And a lot of that's because everything we're doing is very manual. We're not able to just say, find me a summary of all the news for the day. You got to like click through, read it. But if you have this little bot that comes up and says, these are the top 5 points you should know, you can double click on something if you want. Otherwise, you can walk away. It's going to really free up time, mental capacity, and allow us to, get a more balanced approach to life.
So my understanding of Open Interpreter has just changed a little bit, because now I'm thinking of it like a almost like an AI agent that has a, is it called a hierarchical understanding, where you pass it to it'll do an activity and it'll say, is this okay? And you'll be like, yeah. Otherwise it'll just go ahead.
So one of the safety mechanisms with Open Interpreter is auto run is disabled by default. So what Open Interpreter does is it'll take a task, develop a plan to reach that task, or sorry, reach that goal, and then write and execute the code to accomplish it. But there's always a human in the loop to make sure things are good. You can run it, auto run, like a self-driving car. Keep your eyes on the road. Like, don't let it go muck because it might get into a loop, drive up your OpenAI bill. If you're using a local model, make sure the alignment's good, and then otherwise it's a very capable tool.
What's alignment?
Alignment is defined differently by different people, but you can think of it as, does the guardrails on the AI align with your guardrails? Is the AI's goal aligned with your goal? So more often than not, they don't have goals unless you give them one explicitly. And then as long as that's the case, there's no issue. So with a tool like Open Interpreter, it will explicitly lay out the plan and you can say, hey, that is exactly what I want you to do. All good. If not, you just hit no and then rephrase your request and then it can adjust accordingly.
Right. I'm thinking back to, you said the Stream Deck. That's the thing with the little knobs, right?
Yeah, knobs and buttons.
So what are you using that for? In
Everything from like, I got some lights here that I automate. I have my work button. So as soon as I start my work day, I just hit it and everything pops up. I get logged in. You can set different automations. I have my demo time. So when I want, I press the button, lights turn on to the right temperature. Got to get the good skin color. And then it opens up my screen recording software. It opens up my code. It opens up my terminal. So it just gets everything ready where instead of having to do, it's a few seconds of time that it saves, but it's consistent results every time. So I don't have to worry about, oh, like, did I tweak this setting or did I forget to, open up this profile? It's just the same result every time. So it's just one less thing I have to worry about and I can focus on the demo itself.
I wonder about that is really cool. It's also, I literally recorded about home automation yesterday, because it's one of my goals, as I've only just gotten Wi-Fi at my house. I've been hotspotting off my phone for 5 years. I know. So I'm very excited about lights, but I have a tendency in automation to do things that it will save me 15 seconds of time, and it takes me 15 hours to set up the automation. But
That's the engineer's dilemma. We love that
yes.
stuff.
Like with Open Interpreter, you said that it's you can use it through VS Code, or
So, use it through the terminal. So you almost think of it as like a standalone program. So it can give you code that you could copy and paste into VS Code, but there are more optimized tools, whether it's, so I use Cursor as my IDE, and within Cursor, I use Kodi as my inline text complete. So those two AI tools are very well optimized for an editor, for an IDE, but Open Interpreter is more optimized for the general purpose assistant.
okay, and it's utilizing models that are like they're open models, they're any models that you want, and it's using natural language understanding. So it goes back to that thing of like you only kind of get out what you put in. So if I can't succinctly explain what I want, it's not going to be able to do what I want.
Correct. And there's also configuration capabilities where you can give it custom instructions. So for example, I will say, make sure you use Arc Browser or make sure you use Warp as my terminal instead of the default terminal. Guiding it a little bit really helps, but even those special instructions, the importance of them vary between models. So again, GPT-4 being state of the art, it's a lot more capable at just kind of inferring what you're looking for with a little bit of help. Some of the, excuse me, open source models will require a little more coaxing to do what you want. So it's back to what I said earlier, like you need to be willing to experiment and play with the open source models because they don't have the same generality. All
I
good.
wanted to ask, like, what sparked you into exploring open source?
It's always felt right, like the ability to code is kind of like a superpower because you take nothing, a blank screen, using your brain, you create something that people find value in. Like there's nothing there except like changing ones and zeros. You're controlling the flow of electricity through sand. it sounds like a superpower if I've ever heard one. And then it's like, do you use your superpower for good or evil? And not saying closed source is evil, but it's constrained in its reach, and there tends to be a heavy profit motive. And I mean, we need profit motive to encourage people to dedicate their lives to things they don't really want to do. But like I said, I feel I hit the jackpot getting this job with Open Interpreter, where I get to spend my time and energy with my bills covered, being able to work towards bringing this technology to everyone. And very fortunate, not everyone's able to be in a situation like that. But when you spend your life doing something that you hate just to get a paycheck, the closed versus open debate is less relevant. But if you're fortunate enough to be in a position where it's like, hey, I get to make the choices as to how I spend my time, it just feels like the right thing to do. Like, there are going to be billions more people accessing the internet, and a portion of them are going to be software developers, and a portion of those are going to be working with AI. And if we can enable them to have as much tooling as possible, they just like ramp up and can contribute to this global ecosystem of available software that benefits everybody.
I love your energy, like sincerely. You mentioned about like not being behind a screen. Do you have outside hobbies? Like
Oh
what
yeah.
do you?
For a bit of context, I live in a village of 600 people on a peninsula in Ontario, about 3 hours north of Toronto. Best hiking, best kayaking you can find. We're Instagram famous for our crystal blue waters. Yeah, spend the vast majority of my time outdoors, and then inside I tend to be in my office.
Yeah, nice. Who would you interview? You mentioned the Linux founder, but who would you interview in anyone in open source or AI? And I have mentioned before that they are allowed to be dead.
For AI, I would say I saw this, someone else mentioned this on your show, so it's not original, but Andre Karpathy, he was high up at Tesla, high up at OpenAI. He's been involved with and overseen massive advances in AI, and a wonderful communicator and educator. If you're ever looking to like understand LLMs more deeply or want to build your own GPT, his YouTube channel is pure gold. He also seems like a cool guy to have a drink with. And, I got to shoot my shot to try to win him over to Team Open Source. So that would be cool. And I actually don't know if I'd want to interview Linus Torvald. I feel like I'd walk away feeling really dumb, but I'll put a maybe pile, maybe pin on that one.
I think that's one of the best things that I've done recently is like the willingness to look dumb, because you can ask questions that people have had on their mind and they're like, oh, I'm so glad that she was the class clown for that. But
Thank you for
oh,
your service.
that's all right, happy to do it. If you could claim intellectual property rights for anything, or if you could I give two options. Like you can claim intellectual property rights, or you can have just invented anything. What would it be?
Invent anything. That's not, so I kind of go back to my open source stance. I don't know. So being in software for this long, I think software IP is ridiculous. The fact that people can try to claim things like rounded corners and one-click checkout is outrageous to me. Like, that's just a natural progression of where software goes. I understand, especially for like hardware and products, if you put your heart and soul into something, wanting to make sure you reap the rewards of your creativity and your hard work. But for software, no, I don't think there should be software patents. I think that's silly. I don't know. I have a background in health sciences. So for me, there's a big emphasis on medical technology. So if I could invent anything, it would definitely be something like, I'm drawing a blank on the name. There's the nerdy Star Trek things where like you can just like scan someone and be like, oh, like you have this going on. Like, this is how we fix you. The ability to rapidly diagnose and treat a multitude of diseases would be something I would absolutely love to participate in. And I feel like tangentially, Open Interpreter is going to be able to help reach those goals, because it'll be able to offload a lot of the mundane work, allowing doctors and other people in the medical profession to be more researchers rather than having to like go through the nitty-gritty. Like, if we can have people free up their time to be able to pursue curiosity and investigate new potential avenues for like treatment and diagnosis, it's going to reduce suffering immensely.
That's something that I've realized in open source, like very briefly being exposed to it, is the value placed on research time and yeah, the value placed on research time and understanding and like being able to sit with problems and also gathering different people's opinions. Like that is so foreign to me because like I was working with the Jan team and it was so so welcoming and just very like I'm not painting a picture of like everything's perfect in open source, but it's I think it is that thing that you mentioned about like it being beneficial to humankind. Like it's better for the greater good. Like, but with Open Interpreter, I feel like I'm getting this sense. What are your thoughts on like embedded AI? Is that the right term even? Like, because you kept saying robot.
Yep. So with the release of the RabbitR1, Killian put out a call to action being like, let's make the open source version to this. And I don't know when this episode's going out, but probably around that time, there's going to be a release of the O1, the open source equivalent. There's a group of people meeting in Seattle every week, going through this 6-week hackathon to build this open source equivalent. And one of the purposes of that is to get Open Interpreter on a hardware device. Because if I could have a little box right beside me, I press a button and say, I need to do this task. And I can just offload it onto that little box. And then I do my own thing. All of a sudden, I'm freed up to do so much more. So I don't think it's like an end goal or like the grand vision, but it's a good component in order to democratize access to this technology.
That's in 6 weeks' time, did you say?
Well, they're pretty deep into it, so I don't want to put too much pressure on them. So let's say, you know, around the end of the month, sometime in March, maybe. There'll be a pretty big announcement. A lot of people have been involved with it. It's going to be pretty game changing.
And how many hackathons have you like? Are you into?
I've done a fair bit over my career. First one was in blockchain. A couple others with AI. One really cool thing that I've been involved with is internal hackathons where companies say, you know what, hands off the keyboard, like business processes stop, like let's do something that's completely off the roadmap and just like let your creativity flourish. And I firmly believe if more companies embrace this mentality, a lot more innovation would be sparked because going through the day in, day out, you get a very deep understanding of the product or service or whatever it is you're working with, but there's always the human desire to kind of like bring more or like explore little things, like back to the curiosity. So if more companies were willing to just say, look, let's get everyone together across disciplinary team, people with different backgrounds, different experiences, and say, just make something cool, like see what you can do. And then a lot of really cool innovations come from that.
Yeah. I want to ask you one last thing, because again, you seem so positive and like you have actually slept, and most people in AI seem like they haven't slept. Where are you like keeping up with AI news and developments?
Honestly, Twitter X is by far the best place in my mind. There's you have to choose your account that you follow wisely though, because there's just a fire hose of information. I subscribe to a couple newsletters. If you're looking for information on tooling, Ben's Bytes is pretty good. If you're more into podcasts, in regards to like industry news, I listen to the AI Breakdown, daily summary of, you know, everything in the industry. A bit less technical, but still a pretty good summary. Discord has a lot of alpha. Discord, if you can join the Open Interpreter Discord and all of a sudden you're just linked to all these other things, you just have to be able to like parse through, again, the fire hose of information. That's one of the hardest things. That's where I see a lot of value for any entrepreneurial people listening, where if we can distill the vast amount of information into what's trending in Discord, trending on X, and be able to like package it in a way where you can link to more information, that's a very valuable product. And I hope it's open sourced.
That's the first thing that I've been trying to do with AI agents and like experimenting with LangChain. And I've seen, I can't remember her last name, but Maya, I watched a video, was essentially like summarizing Discord bots and like scraping Reddit and trying to find relevant things from like local llama, because I go in there, I'm like, certain things are way above my head and other things are relevant. So, but it's about what is relevant
within the industry. Like I think the like mid journeys, the dollies, the everything that is really interesting, really cool. I can't put mental energy towards it. No. It's not in my core directive, And it's not really a distraction, but it's kind of a distraction because there's infinity rabbit holes you can fall down. So trying to maintain some degree of focus while still, just pursue something you love, add a little bit of exploration on top of that, but you got to be somewhat focused because every day there's new developments.
Yeah, I think, I don't know. I was testing out, I think it was Blue Sky. I need to stop. I need to be like, put blinders on like a horse. I think it was Blue Sky. I was like, I don't care about your AI cartoons. Like I DALL-E and all of that, like they're so amazing, but I can't bring myself to care. And then I feel like I shouldn't poo-poo things like that. But yeah, I'm going to pop in the show notes, Open Interpreters, Discord, and GitHub. But where should people reach out to you? Where are you're most accessible on Twitter, I feel like.
Yep, and the two you mentioned, anyone who's looking to get exposure, whether it's like serious involvement or just a little bit, check out the GitHub. Some good discussions there. It's a good way to get familiar with the product. We do have an X community where you can get a lot of tutorials and guides in a more consolidated form rather than just like Twitter as a whole. And the Discord. Earlier today, I hosted a Build With Me session where I was doing just like some code refactoring. A few people joined in. We worked as a team. We got a PR pushed up. So really cool. The community that's developed. Open Interpreter has been wonderful for bringing people together and just kind of like, here's the core mission. Everyone wants to accomplish it. Build each other up. No drama. It's been very good.
That's awesome. Thank you so much, Mike. I'm really happy to have had this time with you.
There, Nate, this is awesome. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. That wraps up this week's episode of Unsupervised Learning. I'm your host, Renee, and I've had a great time chatting with you. As always, links to everything we discussed will be in the show notes. Make sure you reach out to our guests. Questions or feedback, reach out to pod@unsupervisedlearning.co. Until then, leave a like, follow, or rating on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or YouTube. And until next week, stay curious.